So a few weeks ago, we delved into the beautiful world of SEO with one of our friends, Chris Lee, football aficionado, lover of all good French cuisine, and SEO expert. I think for anyone who wants to understand SEO and what it means for PR, it's a really good listen, isn't it, Patsy?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, SEO is a beautiful world, as you said, but also quite confusing.
Yeah.
There's still a lot of misunderstandings. But I think if you listen to this podcast, you will learn and hopefully understand a bit more the different kind of links, or why links matter in the first place.
Exactly.
Yeah, how they link to your website, different tools to use, and, well, when it makes sense to actually bring an expert in. And most importantly, Chris is going to tell us how he got one of his blogs as number one on Google search.
Number one. Yeah. Well, we hope this will make a very interesting podcast to listen, hosted by Mark Pinson with Chris Lee.
Right, we're back in the podcast studio, and I feel a little bit intimidated slightly, because I'm here with an experienced podcaster. We're new to the game, but I'm here with Chris Lee, who has been podcasting for a while in his own right now, in his other guise as a football knowledge base and aficionado, but that's not what we're going to be talking about today, unless we fancy doing that. But we'll get on to the subject matter of today in a minute. But hello, Chris.
Hello, Mark. Thanks for having me on.
You're more than welcome. It's lovely to have you here. Why don't you, because I'm sure everybody who might be listening to this knows who you are already, but why don't you give us a quick potted introduction to yourself?
Well, thank you very much, Mark. I mean, I think we've known each other about 12 years, and I've been in this industry for about 20 in terms of technology, PR, journalism, and digital. And as you said on the side, I do a lot of content, a website called Outside Right, which looks at the history of football, and technically micro-influencer from that point of view. So I get a different perspective, which we're going to... That's a bit of a callback, here, because I am going to come back to that.
Yeah, later. But you just called yourself a micro-influencer.
I know, it's terrible, isn't it? I don't like that expression even.
I don't even know what it...
I don't like what people call themselves.
I think you are an influencer, but you know, well, I'm a micro one. Is that a modesty around being an influencer? Does micro relate to just a very specific area of focus?
Well, there's no set number for what one could be a micro... when one becomes... graduates from being a micro-influencer. Well, there's apparently a nano-influence as well. Ooh, for like really small micro. And we've all got influence, right? But it's all from a sliding scale. So yeah. Technically, it depends which field you're in, really. But you hit a certain number and you become
you qualify. You get
allegedly. I mean, I had a guy say he'd gone and booked a holiday in the Canaries on Twitter because he'd listened to one of my podcasts on ground hopping in the Canary Islands, which
awesome.
Is basically... So I feel that I've at least influenced one decision in my entire life.
There you go. You've actually genuinely influenced somebody. That's good. So, yeah, no, I think you qualify. Definitely you're an influencer in my eyes.
Thank you very much. And you are too.
Yeah, thanks. But specifically, we're here today to talk about a subject that I guess our industry has been wrestling with for a long, long time. Over the last few weeks, I've seen you've been out and about running training courses on it, and it's SEO in relation to PR or how the PR industry can get more savvy about search engine optimization.
Yes.
As I say, for me, it's something that has been around for quite a while as a discussion point in the industry, and it's never really felt like the PR industry has got its act together around SEO and in specific relation to public relations. So what do you think the current state of play is for SEO and PR?
Well, it's quite interesting because, as you mentioned, I run the PRCA's digital group discussion on this last week at the time of recording. So basically I got in a room with Alex Judd from Grayling, who's done a bit of research. I've done a bit of work with him on that, into the FTSE 100, which I'm going to come back to in a minute. We had Natalie Arney, who's in-house. She's for the in-house perspective, she's at Alternative Airlines. And we had Kaylee Tura from Seeker Digital, who comes from the agency side. So we got a mix of perspectives to talk about, you know, how PR can help win budget or, you know, win more of the search work. Because traditionally there's been, you know, it's this very organic structure of how this industry has evolved from, you know, SEO agencies came up, so we can help you rank and you get a bunch of links, blah blah blah, and then Google changed, became far more intuitive. And for those who are listening, from I don't want it to sound technical, because it's actually not really. There's a lot of technical elements to it, but it's not beyond the bounds. You just need to know, get the right people in who know the right things. But obviously it started off as a bit of a technical discipline, but Google has now looked towards more rewarding more content-based, context-based, relevance-based, link-based as well. So earned links, I should say, from SOS and authoritative sites. So yeah. it's the way that it's migrated in the last decade or so, its algorithm, which has got like 200 odd signals, whatever it happens to be, has certainly played into PR's wheelhouse, so to speak, yeah. our skill set, which yeah. is around building relationships with media, with influencers, people who have can, you know, places we can earn links, social media to share and amplify content, content creation itself, you know. So it's a question of doing the things we know already and then just applying more SEO savvy to it, really. Yeah. And some agencies have done that to a great degree. Some are doing it, you know, link, you know, SEO first, so to speak. And some big ones are creating, have created offerings, but I still think there's a lot of misunderstanding around it as an industry because it's perceived as technical when it's not necessarily, and I want to hope during the course of this conversation we'll demystify that. Yeah. But there are two things just quickly on search. There's branded search, so obviously people looking for your brand and what they find is very important from an investment point of view, from a recruitment point of view, from reputation point of view. And then there's non-branded search, which I think a lot of people will be most interested from a new business top of the funnel lead generation point of view, where you want to be on the first page of Google.
So I don't, there's a whole load of stuff there. Maybe if we start in one of the most obvious places that I know people have sort of struggled with in the past, and that's links, right? So yeah, we all know that a link from a reputable third party linking to your site is really, really valuable. But it's very difficult to achieve. And you know, none of us want to be put in that position where we're just getting clients ringing us up and saying, we got that piece of coverage online, but they haven't linked to our website. Can you ask them to? Because none of us really want to be having that conversation with the journalists. And you can very quickly see whether it's actually the policy of the publication to put links in stories anyway. And also then there's the, I guess, the question around, even if they do have links, are they nofollow links? So does it really help anyway? On that, I mean, I've seen a number of presentations myself from really recent years where agencies have said the best way of doing that is almost making it impossible for the story not to include the link to something on your website. So actually make a deeper piece of content, a report, data, research, whatever it may be, an intrinsic part of the story, so that you almost can't, and a journalist, a publication can't tell that story without linking to that as a reference, which seems incredibly sensible. And actually for me, presents a great opportunity because not only are you doing the job of selling in the earned coverage, but you're actually probably doing the job of creating that deeper piece of content as well. So that to me seems like a really sensible direction we should all be trying to head in. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And it harks back to that thing we've been saying for a very long time at brands as publishers, and we've talked about influencers. Well, why can't brands become influencers themselves? You know, they've got the knowledge, they've got the access to the data, they can create great reports, like you said. And you, if you've got the right people, the right data, for example, something that people love sharing data, let's face it. So, yeah. You know, you've got something that then can strike an emotive note. It can't just be, I mean, the enemy of creativity is ambivalence, you know. It's like if people don't care about your content, they're going to share it. So you have to think about why. First off, why are they going to share this? Why are they going to talk about this? Why are this is going to be irresistible for people just not to want to link back to? So that's the key thing, really, is to like create something that people are going to talk about. It's going to provoke some thought, and is going to encourage people to link back to it. Yeah. And on the nature of the link, like you said, it's like, well, it might be against the policy of the paper to do, or the media site to do. To have a nofollow link if they are going to put a link at all. But that's not necessarily the end of the world, because nofollow still brings traffic.
Yep.
And also it looks like, from what I'm reading, that it might be a stronger signal going forward as a hint. And there's other types of links like rel equals sponsored and rel equals UGC, which I've seen people talking about, which could be great for when you're working with influencers, for example, you want to disclose that there's been a relationship there.
Where should we go next? I mean, there's obviously a whole host of different ways that you can look at work that then benefits SEO from a client perspective. What would you have as the essentials? You know, where would be the PR industry should it be looking if it wants to get better at SEO?
So I think the first thing first is to understand how search engines work, mm-hmm. And the implications for your clients. Get someone in who knows how to run a search audit for a start,
yep.
On your clients, so they can actually say, right, you're ranking for this, you're not ranking for that, your reputation is terrible, or whatever it happens to be. And someone who knows how to do the basics. There is when you talk about technical elements, there are some elements of the website that has to be, you know, that it sounds really basic. But even being mobile ready, which some aren't that mobile friendly, Google marks that down. And then you've got things like, Google My Business. People haven't claimed the business. I mean, we found that in a bit of research we did on the FTSE 100. There's lots of unclaimed companies there. I mean, it's like, you've got to claim that to know and to own your knowledge panel. And what, otherwise, Google will be looking at Wikipedia and other sources to find out information on you as a brand. Mm. And then there's, what else have we got there? There's just read around the subject, get the right people in to help you articulate the offering, and then help create amazing content. And it's not just about structuring the content in the right way as well. It's not just about they're looking at trying to win at snippets. So I'll tell you what, this gearing back to outside right. My biggest driver of traffic is a blog post that I wrote 3 years ago.
Right.
Because it's number one on Google for left-wing football clubs. If you Google that, and I'll tell you why it is, it's because it's done in, I use a thing called H2 headers in the structure. So it's effectively, it's a listicle of these left-wing football clubs. And I write a paragraph about each one. And what Google has done, just because of the way it structures its data, is it's pulled out all the badges from each of those clubs and the crests. And so when you look at it, it's like in position zero, effectively, on Google at the top as a box out. I had nothing to do with that.
Okay.
I just wrote a piece of content and put some H2 as I thought was just a header.
Yeah.
And as it is, people share it. I mean, I saw it being shared like 1,000 times in a space of an evening once on a forum in the States. So it's like, it gets me a lot of traffic.
Yeah.
Now I'll know when my traffic drops that one of my posts has dropped off of Google. But there's an example there. If we can structure things in the right way, then Google will reproduce it in a dynamic sort of format.
Totally. And we do quite a lot of work with clients on their corporate blogs. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those areas I think is so woefully underutilized by organizations in terms of the benefit it can bring. It's a place where content on the website is updated more regularly almost than anywhere else. Mm. It gives you the opportunity to structure and populate content with the right sorts of keywords, with the right sorts of headers. You've got the ability to use some of that metadata on the page source code in the right way as well. And that, it's a really interesting thing. Quite often when we get a new client come to us or a prospect, we'll have a look at their blog and you can very quickly see how disciplined they are or how organized they are around SEO by looking at the source code on the page just to see whether they've put any thought at all in using that metadata in a optimized way, which tells you a story then about whether they're getting the most out of that content or not. And it's exactly as you say. I think one of the things we've started doing with quite a few of our clients is just experimenting with different types of blog posts structured in different ways, and it's really interesting then just look at the data and see what's generating traffic and where results are coming from. And some of that is let's really very quickly turn around a good strong bit of content on a very topical issue and see if we can have that become a bit of a reference for that subject quite quickly, which we've managed to do with one client around GDPR and video surveillance, and that suddenly became a bit of an issue that people didn't realize was a thing, that video or footage from video surveillance is the same nature of personally identifiable content as an email address, and therefore is needs to adhere to GDPR regulations. So suddenly lots of people were searching on that. We put out a piece of content and it was actually very quickly ranking above the EU's own advice on it, which is great. And
it's a great result.
It was great. We're quite pleased with that. But and it sits there as an evergreen piece of content that is constantly now becoming a bit of a traffic magnet for them. But I think a lot of it is about experimentation with different types of content, some of it topical, some of it reference, some of it evergreen, those sort of things, and seeing what works and then optimizing around that.
Why planning is so important. It's got to be about consistency and keywords are great for research. One of the key thing here is not about you know, how often it appears or anything like that anymore. But it's all about relevance, and Google's learning all the time. But like you said, it's from my perspective, it's quite interesting because I know when I get an approach from a PR, and I know approach when I get an approach from an SEO on Outside Right, because the PR will be interested in you know, coverage and talking to the client and the experience, and that's fine. They know that the value is going to come, and they're probably linked to them anyway. But then I know from the SEO point of view, it's very impersonal. It doesn't necessarily have the same like approach to or any kind of strategy. It's more like scattergun, sort of like, can you put this in and can you link to it, blah, blah, blah. So we've seen a lot of unscrupulous behaviour in that regard. They're going around on Twitter this week, actually, that we're recording.
Interesting. I mean, one of the things I think you kind of touched on in relation to agencies improving their game around SEO is, I suppose, the knowledge and understanding when you need to bring in an expert and when in other areas, you know, you have the skills already. Because I think that can be a bit of a grey area for agencies. It's right. Do we know enough to do it ourselves? At what point do we bring somebody in who's maybe going to do that initial piece of research? We're all conscious, I suppose, that the algorithms change relatively frequently. So you've got to be across that. You've got to understand the implications of that and know what it means. So, you know, it's always going to be a fine line between when you need a specialist and expert and when you feel like you're in a position to do it yourself. If you were going to be kind of defining on what falls on the specialist side of the line, what would be the sort of tasks that you would put in the bucket of where you really need somebody who is across the detail of not only the algorithm but the tools you use to plan stuff?
Well, I think that we've all got the skills we need to turn around good content. I think personally, or we should do in PR anyway, and should be able to like earn links, you know, with great ideas, great content. I think where maybe the PR industry falls down is, like you said, just either knowing the basics or even just being able to use tools such as Google Analytics, Google Trends, various keyword planning tools, analytics tools, you know, Ahrefs or SEMrush, whichever you happen to use. And understanding how the PR work they do impacts the search rankings and other implications on those tools that you're searching with. And then also it's an iterative process. It's not like, hey, we're top of Google and that's that. It's like, actually, we're top, that's great, fantastic, it's driving this amount of traffic, but really we've got to keep this up. How are we going to do that? Let's get stronger, let's build our domain authority, let's build those links, let's keep going, you know, so for keep this going as long as possible. And anything can alter that, like you said. It could be an algorithm change, it could be someone else or a competitor getting better at their own SEO. I mean, it's like there's so many variables as to what it could knock you off the perch. So it's a question of analytics. This has to be continual. It has to feed into planning, and it has to be like a continual cycle.
Yeah, and you know, analytics obviously is absolutely key here, just to see how well you're doing in the effect of it, because you know that's where the evidence is presented that the investment is worth it. And that's what I love about it is the measurability of it. And and you know, when the industry has struggled as a whole to put concrete measures in place around what might be regarded as traditional PR activities, then as soon as we get the opportunity to do something where there's much more of a direct correlation between outcomes and results and to the work that's been done, we should jump all over it.
You know, it's far more measurable. You know, for a start, like you said, you know how many people are coming at the start to your website. Put a piece of content out there that gets great, resonates, starts to rank, builds links. You can track all of these things, and you can go back to it and say that was our work. You can even look at behavioural change. You can go onto Google Trends and see the number of branded, you know, see if it's impacted the searches for that particular brand or term or whatever it happens to be. So there's ways of measuring it and even putting a value on it. If you want to think about like what the advertising equivalent would be, as in. Online, I'm careful, not saying ABA,
careful,
oh my goodness.
Careful now.
You know what I mean? If you were to pay to be top, you know.
Because I think that's a really important point, because as you say, you know, if we were talking about AVEs in relation to traditional media coverage, you know, absolutely none of us should be doing that. But the point is, in search. It's much more of a direct choice for organizations. Now, do we want to do PPC advertising on Google to force ourselves up to the top, knowing that that's a known quantity and we're going to drive traffic and it's going to cost us a certain amount of money? But if we were to drive that same level of traffic organically against those same search terms, then it is it can be much more of a directly comparable thing.
And you've got the added trust value because people know they've been paid for to be presented first.
Absolutely.
Whereas if you're top of the organics, which a lot of people will look for, then you've earned the right to be there, and you'll have that added trust where people, feel maybe a bit more of a connection towards you.
Yeah. Actually, that's a silly question that I often ask people, and I'm just curious about it. With you being a search expert, when you search on something and you get the same result, the same website is returned to you, one is a paid search result and one is the top organic one. Which one do you click on?
Well, I know what you mean, because it obviously sounds like someone's probably protecting their brand by bidding against their own name. I go for the free one because
it's one of those questions I ask people. It's really, I think it's a real insight when they go, "Nah, I click on it, make them pay for the ad." It's like, "Oh, that's really...
£7." Go on.
Yeah, it's really funny. Good. I'm glad you do. You're rewarding the hard work that's been put into getting them to the top of the search.
Well, there's
rankings.
Trillions of pages out there being crawled, so they weren't the right to be there. So
yeah, absolutely.
Give them a free click. Come on.
So you've been out, as I say, talking to the industry, and you've been doing that for a while. And what I'm interested to know is whether you've got a sense that the industry is starting to get it, it's going to sound like a derogatory thing, but are they asking smarter questions at those events? Because I've been to a few of the SEO events in PR, and I sometimes feel that you just get a different audience in the room asking the same questions that they were asking a few years ago. But have you felt that there is a general better understanding, a momentum towards understanding the subject better? Yeah,
I think there is, and that's a good thing. I think those that do take the time to educate themselves, go to the events, and meet the people and follow them on Twitter and stuff like that, they're only going to help themselves to become better professionals at PR, really. I mean, it's very great coming from an agency side. It's great to know all these things and that, but then the challenge is how do you upsell that to an in-house budget holder, decision maker that doesn't necessarily share the same view or understand the same implications. So that's what we often find. One of the things we were discussing last week was the silofication of everything.
Yeah.
Departments, and some people very protective about data, or some people, So it's a question of just working together, really. And so there's an education piece that needs to be done both in agency and in house.
That's always been the case for us in agencies when dealing with our in house clients what they're held accountable for. Defines what they ask the agency to do. And I think you're right, that the education and the changing roles internally so that a PR person in-house recognises that delivering increased volume of traffic to the website is a positive result for them is really, really essential.
And the external view is really important. So imagine if you were the analytics holder and you give the read and analyze access, which is a really safe way to give access to Google Analytics to someone. They might find things that you haven't necessarily seen. Because they're curious, having a look around and going, look, you've got X amount of traffic coming from South America. Why haven't you got a Spanish language site? You're missing out on a massive market there. That sort of thing. These are things that a PR will pick up on, or not APR, but external view would pick up on. So there's lots of positives to doing that.
Yeah, and we've got to find a way, and we've got to commercialize it. So it's about, I guess, it's not about turning PR agencies into SEO agencies.
No.
It's about us understanding how SEO can be used to open up doors to bigger opportunities for us with our clients, and to be doing more content creation work and showing the value of what we do, and that to me is why we want to know and have SEO as part of our offering, is because it opens the door for us to be doing richer, deeper, more involved content work for our clients.
And this whole thing reminds me of the conversation. Remember, we were having this conversation about social media like 12, 13 years ago with clients. The difference being Google's not going anywhere. Search isn't going anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, we're always going to use search engines. We may use increasing amounts of voice, for example, you know, and it's going to change, but it's still, we're still going to use search engines.
Yeah.
Whereas with social media, is, you know, the social media has changed a lot over 12 years. You know, you'd invest in a platform that's no longer there. So yeah, I think it's a very different type of conversation. It's very measurable. And, you know, it's just a question of, I mean, things are a lot easier sell already. You should be pushing on an open door. It's just a question of does the budget holder understand it, and how can we articulate the offering?
Yeah, and just to look forward a bit, and you've just mentioned it there, and I think it's fascinating, and it's maybe something that people aren't thinking about right now, but voice for search. You know, when people sort of say to Alexa or whatever, yeah, where's the nearest great Chinese restaurant? And, you know, that's a search query, and somehow then the algorithm works out which one to tell you. And the point is there, you're not then looking at a page of results that you scan down and scroll and see the one that looks like it's, you know, got the best rating on TripAdvisor or whatever. It gives you one single result. And it's like, okay, well, that's even more of a critical search engine optimization job to be done. How do we navigate the way to when somebody asks that question of Alexa, we're the answer. And have we got any idea right now how to do that?
I don't. I mean, I this is beyond my ken, I'll be honest with you. At this point, I don't know enough about voice. And there are people giving talks about voice. I would rather defer to them than give any kind of misleading advice.
I mean, it's just it's just a crazy area because, as I say, you know, you think about it in that context, and it changes. I don't know. It's funny when you search in a traditional search engine, you know, because your expectation, your knowledge is you're going to get a page for the results bank. You've kind of got this inbuilt understanding. You're going to have to scroll down and do a bit of filtering of that yourself to decide which one to click on. It's not automatic that you click on the first one. You'll have a look down the first two, three, four, and decide one of those that looks the best. But the mentality around voice search is very different. I think the way that people phrase questions in voice is different to the way they might phrase questions in search. And so, you know, they want the right answer. But that, again, is just something that's driven by an algorithm that's deciding this is the right answer. I think that's going to be really interesting over the next few years to see how that pans out. I'm no doubt that there will be specialist search consultancies that arise that claim that they can help you become the answer on any of the smart voice assistants.
This is really sad, but I can remember the first time I did a voice search, and the same way I can still remember the first time I checked football scores on a mobile device. So it's just like, you know, it's just one of those things, really. It's just sort of like personal milestones in technology that we notice. It's definitely something that's going to pick up and we're going to get more used to it.
Cool.
That was fascinating. Thanks to Mark Pinsent and Chris Lee for educating us on the theme of SEO.
It was. And if you want to have more information on Chris Lee, who is also an independent PR and digital director, PRCA trainer, speaker, copywriter, CTAM contributor, and fun fact, he speaks Spanish as well.
Muy bien.
Just check out on 8Moon Media, www.8moon.co.uk.
And you can follow him on the good old Twitter @CMRLee.